You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 27th of October. My name is Pieter Redlingeis, and I've taken over the MoneyWeb Now podcast for the week. This week pretty much goes as usual from here. We talk to some market commentators to get a feel for the markets in the mornings. We speak to some companies that we really, really like, that we think are going to be doing well in future. And then we've put a bit of an educational twist on the rest of the show, as we'll be speaking to some real professionals in their field about some really, really very big topics. But on the show today, the U.S. market sold off really, really, really hard last night. So we'll speak to Preston Nainsami from Nedbank Private Wealth. He's a portfolio manager there, to give us an idea of what was driving markets last night, as well as maybe ask him a few things about what he thinks about the famous brands numbers that were released yesterday. After that, we'll speak to Kobus Lertz, who is the CEO of Pan African Resources, about some of the latest developments at the company and why it is such an investment compelling investment case at this stage. And then once again, we'll shift the focus to education when we chat to Sam Feinstein, who is a portfolio manager and the co or deputy CIO at Definitive Capital or Definitive Wealth. We will be talking to him about asset allocation and its role in long-term portfolio construction and risk management, I suppose. But first, some morning headlines pulling off of the MoneyWeb website. First one here is lockdown The lockdown has forced many to dip into their retirement savings due to a lack of income. So it's, I suppose, quite an interesting read just to see what the situation is there. Obviously, you know, lockdown has been really bad. A lot of people have been negatively affected. So I guess some of the realities of our current situation reflected in that. And then the second headline, why the JSE is walking backwards compared to offshore markets. Those stories both on the MoneyWeb homepage at this stage. But first, let's look at morning markets. It was, as mentioned, a relatively rough session in the US last night, with the S&P 500 ending 1.86% lower. Since then, markets have bounced a little bit, at least on the futures side. But looking over sort of at the Asian session, markets still relatively weak. CSI 300 index in China down around 1/3%. Hang Seng down 1.1%. In Australia, the sort of market index ASX 200 is down 1.1%. Bulletin down 2.25%. Brent crude oil bouncing a little bit, but it had a really rough day yesterday. Brent crude oil currently sitting at around this $41 level, just above. It's up around 0.5% where it was yesterday, but I think it was down 3% on the day for yesterday. So a relatively mixed bag. Looking at the Rand, currently trading at 16.17 to the dollar. So that's actually fighting back a little bit of the ground that it gave back yesterday. So that's around 0.33% stronger.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Good morning, Preston. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Good morning, Petri, and morning to your listeners. Good to be here.
Yeah, man. I hope you can explain to me what happened last night. it was a red day for us, I suppose. No real surprise, but the US got smacked hard.
Yeah, quite an interesting one, Pietri. Basically, I heard, one of the comments I heard is that, basically fiscal stimulus not coming as quick as we want, and the virus literally just infecting much more people, so gaining more traction from that perspective. So, record new high cases in the U.S., and then, there's COVID cases in Europe also increasing quite rapidly. So it looks like this global risk-off type of trade, it's both of those factors, It's the fiscal stimulus part. And it looks like the virus, unfortunately, is really,
making a bit of a comeback, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's what's spooking markets a little bit, Pietri. And the S&P was down around 3% at one point, and then finishing the day around 1.9% down. So it's been the worst session in the last month or so.
Yeah, and it started to smell a little bit like real panic, I suppose I went to bed early because I had to be up early. When that market was sort of down in that 3% region, it really started feeling like it was quite a bit of panic selling there, and we haven't actually seen real proper panic in the market for a while. And okay, sure, it bounced about 1%, so it didn't end in panic, but still relatively concerning. And it's interesting to see that we had that really strong move with the lack of Chinese markets as a lead yesterday. Today we have them 10 cents down some 3%. How much do you think that's going to play into what unfolds today?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of volatility, Pietri. If you just look at just the performance yesterday, I looked at the sectors. All 11 of the S&P 500 sectors were down, and it looked like, in particular, the more cyclicals got smashed. You know, the likes of your energy and industrial stocks, and the more defensives held up a little bit. So I think with the election coming up as well, lack of stimulus package coming to market and rising COVID cases, I think the next week or so there's going to be a lot of volatility. And I mean, coupled with this, I think more than 50% of the S&P by market cap are releasing results in the next week or so. So we have Q3 results coming. So I think, you know, all of these factors, and yeah, I think it's just going to bring a lot of volatility, you know. And I mean, on the European side, we also have, the market traded lower. Despite the likelihood of a no-deal Brexit, you know, so that's reducing. But yeah, just so many factors, Pietri, and I think the next week and a half is really going to be rough.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And then to get a little bit of a feel, and you know, I have to say, I agree with you, to tell you the truth, because we have a lot of uncertainty around what the outcome of this election is going to be. And if it's contested, it might, I don't know, it's, America's a weird place. So I guess caution is advised. I wanted to get your feel of what you thought of the Famous Brands results that came out yesterday. I've been seeing some mixed sort of reports in the news, I guess. I didn't think they were too bad, but I want to do a bit of a sanity check to see what you thought of them.
Yeah, I looked at the result as well, Pietri. I mean, headline earnings per share down close to 50%. The stock finished up by about 1%, but it's still, you know, it's still, I think, 40% down year to date. So it's still, trading very well below what it started at the beginning of the year. But I mean, you know, this company, the lockdowns have really hurt the restaurant sector. Hey? So, it's very difficult when all of your revenue disappears. And, that's the difficulty with, the companies operating in this type of sector, even, you know, Spur as an example. You're sitting with a consumer that's under a lot of pressure. Some of the commentary from Famous Brand Management was that there's still a lot of pressure to come. There's a lot of uncertainty, consumer under pressure, unemployment going up. I mean, it's very difficult on the ground here, you know, in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And I guess the good thing from their perspective and what I took as a positive is that there's quite a lot of liquidity that they have, and which mm-hmm. is good. It does help them navigate through this, you know, uncertainty a little bit better. But yeah, overall, it's a very, very difficult sector to be operating in. And if we have some form of lockdown measures that do come, you know, back here in South Africa, I know it's unlikely, but there's still some commentary that's talking about infection rates rising as we go into December and beyond that. So there's still, you know, there's still a little bit of uncertainty there and what that could mean, especially given what we've seen in the likes of Spain and Italy and, you know, these European countries. This could really hurt a company like this operating in the restaurant sector. So a little bit cautious from my perspective, Pietri. And I think, you know, it's one where we really need clarity on the recovery, containment of this virus. And, you know, then, you know, it would be feasible, I think, to look at some of these counters that operate in the sector.
All right. So until then, you're thinking, be a little cautious. But all right. Okay. Thank you very much, Preston. That's Preston Narasamy from Nedbank Private Wealth, who's a portfolio manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
All right. And on the line now, we have Kobus Luits, who is the CEO of Pan African Resources. Kobus, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Good morning, Petri. Thank you for having us.
Firstly, I owe you an apology, and I offer it. I wrote an article about Pan-African in the Business Day, and I got some facts wrong. I had my wires crossed with regards to BEE transactions, so my apologies on that one. I'm glad to have the opportunity to chat to you and to learn a bit more about your company. We've been following it relatively closely, particularly interested in that in the tailings operations that you guys have, and I guess want to find out exactly how much money you guys have been making with the gold price where it is.
Yes, Petri, I think, you know, we all, some people say that mining consists of long, cold winters and short, beautiful summers. And certainly as far as the gold price is concerned, both in US dollars and then obviously with the Rand tailwinds, the price is sitting at about a million Rand per kilo, are very attractive at present.
Yeah. Yeah. And what sort of my questions today sort of really want to focus around the tailings operations that you guys have. I mean, this is sort of a new, I want to say, trend in the mining industry that's surfaced over the last couple of years, where we see more and more producers are going into this reprocessing of tailings. Why all that focus on there? I mean, obviously you can do it for much lower cost. I think your all-in sustaining cost on the tailings is somewhere around $600 an ounce. Selling that for $1,900, that's a huge margin. But what about sustainability? I mean, at what point do we run out of tailings to process? You know, do you have sort of secure supply of the stuff for the next 10 or 20 years?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, obviously there's been a number of projects on the tailings side, and you know, our flagship project is called Elikhulu at the Evander site. So, Evander's been mining since the 1950s. There's more than 100 million tons of tailings on surface. And yes, I mean, we constructed this Elikhulu plant. It was 1.8 billion we put into the ground in 2018. And as you say, it's one of the lowest cost, if not the lowest cost producer of gold in South Africa. So, you know, we're producing, as you said, $600, and it's a great margin. It also it's sustainable. The life of Elikhulu now is 12 years. So in gold mining terms, that's a long time.
Okay.
And you know, it has the added benefit of rehabilitating the old and legacy tailings dumps or facilities as we go along. The challenge obviously is that you need a large quantum of tailings to in order to invest this sort of money, 1.8 billion. And unfortunately, you know, that's sort of not that many opportunities still around. So. Obviously, DRD, that you know well, I mean, they also do very good work in the space, and it's ourselves, and Harmony's just bought the mine waste solutions, the AngloGold tailings. So there's some of these operations, and they, as you say, are incredibly attractive at this gold price, but also at pretty much any gold price because of the low cost of production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in terms of an outlook for gold, we've seen gold really... perform very well, I suppose, this year. And I think a lot of that is on the back of, obviously, U.S. fiscal stimulus and all that kind of stuff that we don't necessarily... and monetary stimulus, you know, with something like 20% of all the U.S. dollars in circulation were printed this year, right? And there's a whole bunch of talk about them adding another $2 trillion to the mix. So this type of inflationary pressure is probably only going to put more upward pressure on the gold price. I think potentially post-election we might see a sharp fall. But, I mean, you're not really all that sensitive to the gold price at this stage. With the other operations that you have, the sort of beneath the surface stuff, I know you've had to you know, shut some of those down during this time of COVID and social distancing and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, from that perspective, you know, how are things going on that side? I mean, if the gold price sort of stays lofty at this level and your operations return to normal... what kind of sustainability is there going to be behind how long you guys are going to be able to continue to mine for? You know, at what price point does the gold have to sort of drop to, essentially, before it becomes less attractive for you to operate?
Yeah, it's also an interesting question, in that you have to not only look at the dollar price of gold, but also the rand exchange rate.
Mm.
You know, for South African producers, pretty much 95% of our costs are rand based. So it also depends sort of on what the rand does, and you know what you see is an inverse correlation between the dollar gold price strength and the rand. So there's a bit of a natural hedge there, but you know as Pan African, I mean we have long life and attractive assets. So we're targeting an all-in sustaining cost for our group in total of about $1,000 an ounce, which is
very, very low.
One of the lowest. Yeah, it's the lowest in pretty much in Southern Africa. And then, you know, also internationally very competitive. Mm. So that means, you know, we have quite a lot of margin to play with at this point. And that's why we were able to sort of really dramatically increase our dividend that is up for approval at the upcoming AGM. And, you know, we our balance sheet is de-gearing, so we're saying that at this gold price in the next, certainly by the end of our financial year, FY21, which is 30 June, we should be pretty much ungeared. You know, so it's quite attractive.
I think you'll be the only player in the space with that can say that.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, also, you know, we have long life assets. Barberton Gold Mines has been going, it's one of the oldest operating mines in the world. It's been going for 130 years. And we still have 20 years plus of underground mining at Barberton. And then we're the only people, I think, building a large new underground mine also in South Africa, in Egoli. And that's going to come online in the next 2-3 years at the Evander site. So, you know, you're looking at about 200,000 ounces currently from Pan African. Our guidance for the year ahead is 190. And that should increase to 250,000 ounces in the years ahead, at this sort of quite attractive cost, not only in South Africa, but globally.
Yeah, that's looking, the future looks very bright and, excuse the pun, but shiny. Kobus, thank you very much for your time this morning. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I really enjoyed chatting to you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
The 2020 medium-term budget policy statement will be the most crucial budget announcement in decades. All eyes will be on Finance Minister Tito Mboweni as he will outline the government's financial plans to overcome the damage the lockdown inflicted on our economy. Join MoneyWeb with Dr. Adrian Saville, Dr. Ira Jabidian, Sizakele Marahlule, and Dr. Azar Jameen for a post-budget webinar on Wednesday, 29 October at 3:30. The panel will explore whether Mboweni's plans offer realistic solutions to the economic challenges. Register for the webinar at moneyweb.co.za.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Alrighty, and we're back. Now we're chatting to Sam Feinstein, who's the deputy CIO at Definitive Capital and a portfolio manager and a fund manager, and probably one of the youngest fund managers I've ever come across. Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Good morning, Petri. Thanks for having me. Good morning to your listeners.
All right. So, Sam, we're going to chat a little bit today. Well, I'm hoping that you can sort of enlighten us. We've trying to put a bit of an educational spin on things, and we want to try and help sort of younger investors who are starting out in the field or, you know, they don't necessarily have to be young, just newer investors, learn a couple of things. Yesterday, we spoke a little bit about fundamental analysis, and today we were going to be talking about asset allocation. So could you take us through exactly what is asset allocation? Why is it important? And how do we use it in portfolio construction?
Sure. So asset allocation is relatively simple, I would say, arguably a little bit simpler than security selection, which is what you were talking about yesterday in the podcast on fundamental analysis.
Yeah.
It's essentially finding the right mix of assets to try and achieve some sort of predefined objective, whether that be sort of a fund objective or a client's objective. And you can this would be combining things like equities, bonds, real estate, commodities. And the whole goal is to achieve a much higher risk-adjusted return than you could by holding any of the individual assets together by themselves. So by holding all these different asset classes together, that you can use the principles of diversification and they get a much smoother return profile to compound returns over time. So there's many different ways that you can achieve this. You can go the sort of the quantitative route where you're using optimizations, concepts like risk parity or momentum, or you could go a more traditional route, like you could equally weight all asset classes together. You could go with a traditional 60-40. So it's all about finding this right mix of asset classes that will best achieve the objective of the client.
All right. So sorry to interrupt. Can I carry on?
Sure. So the reason this is really important is that we know from both academic and industry research that the asset allocation decision drives the majority of the returns in the portfolio. And therefore, it is the logical starting point when you are thinking about allocating money in capital markets that it is sort of the first decision you should be making at your asset allocation.
All right. And this is, I mean, how much does this tie up with portfolio theory? If I remember that stuff correctly, that I was kind of looking at the correlation between not only different asset classes, but individual sort of equities and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so portfolio theory is based on the assumption that by holding a portfolio of assets, it's better than holding any individual asset by itself. And the reason for that is, again, you use diversification or as you said, correlations, and you're looking for assets that sort of zig when other assets in your portfolio are zagging. And that those assets moving against each other will create a much smoother return profile. So your sort of traditional portfolio theory would use sort of returns, volatility, and correlations, and you would run the optimization, and you would get an outputting portfolio. But there's obviously many different ways that you can approach the problem of asset allocation.
Yeah, it's a really vast discipline if you think about it. I mean, what are some of the things that you consider? You say like, okay, fine, it's a very sort of unique case by case basis, but what are some of the things you take into consideration when deciding, you know, how to build an asset allocation model for an individual client or for a fund or whatever the case is?
Well, the first thing that's very important is to understand what you're trying to achieve with the portfolio, and that will really drive what sort of assets you would include in the portfolio. So for me personally, we like the idea behind things like risk parity and momentum, which essentially just takes into account various correlations and volatility, and less so forecasts of returns. But depending on the fund or the client, you know, there's lots of different methods that could work.
Okay. All right. And then lastly, before we go, Sam, because unfortunately we are running out of time, if I wanted to learn about this, or if someone listening to this wanted to learn about this, have you got any books that you would recommend as a starting point?
Sure. So one of the best books I've read on asset allocation is Balanced Allocation. I can't remember the author off the top of my head. Anything by Bridgewater Associates and Ray Dalio, they've got one of the best research departments, I think, in the world in terms of asset allocation. There's also Resolve Asset Management out of Canada that publish really good research. And then there's a weekly blog that is published by Bill Ehrman, who was one of the co-portfolio managers with George Soros in his flagship fund. And that's if you just type into Google, Invest Accordingly, that's his weekly blog where he sort of comments on markets and talks about his portfolio positioning. So I think if you were starting, that's where I would start in terms of finding sort of, you know, these very legendary successful asset allocators and understanding how they're thinking and viewing current developments to try and shape your view.
All right. That's awesome. Thank you very much, Sam. Thank you for your time this morning. Sam Feinstein, the Deputy Chief Investment Officer at the Definitive Capital. And that is all that we have time for today. We are 3 minutes over, in fact, and I have to be very grateful to both Eddie and Kildora for the assistance this morning. And my apologies for running over the time. I can see that I'm in producer trouble. We'll chat to you again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.